Welcome to Quest for Gold. We are now 63 days out from the Winter Olympics in Milan Cortina. I'm Ryan Burrow. There are growing concerns the construction of the main ice hockey rink for the 2026 Milan Cortina Winter Games won't be complete in time for the tournament. The NHL Deputy Commissioner Bill Daly says if it's not ready, the NHL players aren't coming. A testing event was supposed to be held in December at the venue, but that's been pushed to a smaller venue due to the construction delays. The Chief Games Operations Officer of Milan Cortina told the Associated Press last week there's no plan B for further delays, and a test event at the newly constructed rink is still on schedule for the second week of January. Russian skiers and snowboarders this week won a court ruling to apply as neutral athletes to the Winter Games. As we've mentioned before, athletes from Russia will not be able to compete under the Russian flag due to the invasion of Ukraine, but some sports are allowing individual athletes to participate under the neutral flag. NBC Universal is again bringing social media stars to the games to help expand its coverage from Italy and beyond on the small screen. Bowen Yang and Kylie Kelsey will be among the more than 20 creators who will be building and distributing content for fans on YouTube, Meta, Instagram, and TikTok. Of course, Snoop Dogg will be back as well. Ralph Lauren released its Winter Olympics fashions for Team USA this week, including a red, white, and blue knit sweater, cream trousers, and a matching wool coat for the upcoming ceremony. The closing ceremony outfit includes a puffer coat over a color block sweater. Might not seem like a big deal for the average fan, but for these athletes, it's part of a massive clothing ensemble that they'll probably have in their closets for the rest of their lives. And of course, they'll also be available for sale to the public. This week on Quest for Gold, we chat with four-time Paralympian Kendall Gretsch of Downers Grove, Illinois, as she looks to make Italy her fifth straight games.
You have four golds, two silvers, and a bronze. You compete in the summer games, you compete in the winter games, and right now you're looking to qualify for Italy still, right? Where are you physically at right now?
Yeah, so I'm in Canada right now, and we are about to start our first World Cup of the season tomorrow. So this is kind of the official start of everyone's season. We'll have six races total here in Canada. We'll do three cross country this week, and then next week we'll do three biathlon races. So now through January is kind of the final period, I guess the final qualification period for the games. So it's a little bit of a complicated system. It's not like a straight, there's not like a trials event. It's based off of, it actually started last season. So last season, all the countries start earning spots for their country. So right now, as it stands, the US, we have six women's spots and six male slots. And then based on how we do in their races early season, so this set of races here and then in early January, that's how we determine who from the U.S. team will get those spots.
So are you accumulating points then in these World Cup races?
Yes. Yeah. So we'll accumulate points throughout the season that will go towards your like overall ranking, and that is part of how they determine who will go on the team.
You're at the Team USA summits. That's probably a good sign that you're in a pretty good place right now. They wouldn't have invited you. Granted, you've got some hardware behind you as well. All right, so you do both the summer and the winter games. 18 month or so turnaround this time around, so a little bit maybe lengthier than Paris.
You know, I guess in some ways this one has felt a little bit relaxed in comparison to Tokyo and Beijing, just with it being delayed because of COVID. It was only a 6 month break. So the 18 months has felt great. And yeah, it I feel like has made such a big difference for me in my preparation for this Winter Games, because I was actually able to have this whole summer season where I still did some triathlon racing, but that was definitely not the focus for me. So this whole summer I was really able to do kind of the exact training that you would do as a winter athlete versus like thinking about, oh, I have world championships for triathlon here. I have the games for triathlon here and I need to be in peak form for that. So it really has felt like a very good physical preparation, but then also just mentally not having to be so on for both seasons has been really nice.
Safe to say that you are a full-time athlete. You don't have another job outside of this?
Yeah, just full-time athlete now. I had a job for a while, and then kind of slowly transitioned in 2019, did more part-time work, and then ever since COVID, really, I've been just full-time athlete.
You've been at this elite level now for several years and several of these Paralympic cycles. Talk a little bit about the para movement, kind of how it's evolved, even since you became a part of it, maybe in the late teens, 2018, somewhere around there.
Yeah, I mean, I think what's been so cool to watch is just the growth within para sports, and just the level of competition has increased so much. Like, I think personally, I know I feel like I've every single year, in order to stay at the same level, you just have to get better because the competition is just getting so much better. And I think there's a lot of parts that are playing into it. We're seeing athletes getting a lot more support from their countries, so they have better funding and resources that they're able to put into better equipment. And so I guess for skiing, that would be, they have better skis available to them. They have better sit skis available to them. And then I think there's also just a greater support around I what I would say the high performance side of it. So everyone's really dialing in like their nutrition and recovery and strength plans. And so all of these things have just steadily kind of like notched up where people are at and made the competition harder, but it's exciting.
Yeah, I guess my question then is, so was the US always kind of at the top of the game when it came to para sports, and now other countries are picking up and investing more? Or obviously you said that were you, 7, 8 years ago noticing a big difference between the US competitors versus other countries, and now that's starting to level out a little bit?
A little bit. I would say, at least for skiing, I would say the US was pretty early on top of getting, for example, our sit skiers in Korea. So the 2018 games, I think we were one of the only countries where our sit skiers had our own custom carbon fiber sit skis. And now you see a lot more countries will have that going forward. So I would say that we have definitely kind of been on the leading side of that. And so yeah, you're seeing other countries catch up and yeah, just being able to invest in that a little bit more.
Has the sponsorship money come around?
I think that's still definitely like room for growth. I think you see more athletes that have sponsors individually, but I think yeah, I mean, I think it's kind of a general theme across both Olympics and Paralympics. Like, there could always be more sponsors, right? Every athlete, unless you really are kind of at the top level, you're not necessarily getting that sponsor support. So you do rely on the support that you're getting from your national governing body. So for us, that's US Para Nordic. We are under the USOPC, so all of our national team athletes, we get funding from that. And they are really, that's what allows us to be able to travel for full time during the winter, go to all the competitions. And so yeah, I guess I would say sponsors is still an area of growth, I think, especially for the Paralympics.
Well, and you mentioned travel and training, and I think another part of it that we probably don't mention about, because we just see you on the equipment all the time, is equipment. I mean, how much does your equipment cost to not only have but maintain as well?
Yeah, I mean, I think equipment is always a huge cost. I think probably like a big unknown thing or that people don't know about, especially in cross-country skiing, is just the cost of skis itself. So our team, we have like a fleet of skis that all of our sit skiers are able to use. but it's probably there's probably for each individual athlete like six plus pairs of skis that they're traveling around with. So, and each pair of skis is can be like $1,000. So you're looking at a lot of money and investment that's going into each individual athlete just in skis alone. And then there's the cost of the wax that you have to use to prep the skis. Even just the staff that it takes to prepare the skis is an extra cost too. And then yeah, obviously our ski sit skis themselves. Luckily the sit ski I'm in I've had for quite a while, so which that's nice. It's worked well for me. So I've had the same one for now since 2018.
Well, okay, but you said you have six of them, right? Or the average eagle?
So the actual skis that go on my sit ski. So there's like two pieces. There's the piece that I'm actually physically sitting in, and then there's the skis themselves. And so the skis themselves, that's where I would say that's probably like one of the bigger costs for our team because they just have so many of them. You'll go into so they have what's called our wax cabins, and that's where we have a whole team of staff that are preparing the skis for us. They put wax on them before each race based off of the snow conditions, the temperature outside. And you go in and the lo walls are just lined with skis because they have so many that depending upon the conditions, different skis will be faster one day to the other.
Did you travel with them? Are they with you? Do you have to check them when you fly around? Or do you,
Oh, yeah.
I know some athletes too, they've got like their uniforms and stuff. They bring it with them because they're just afraid that it's going to get lost somewhere.
Yeah, there are definitely things that like I always put in my carry-on bag because if I don't get that, then I'm not racing. Unfortunately, like as a sit skier, if my sit ski doesn't get there, I'm not racing. So my most important things tend to go in that box. But yeah, we when we show up to the airport, it's you have so much stuff. It's like a duffel bag, your sit ski box, our rifles for biathlon, and then we'll have
Probably not a carry-on for that one.
no, not a carry-on. Not a carry-on for any of those items that I just listed. And then our ski bags and the ski bags will have like six team ski bags, and these massive, massive bags. So, yeah, it's definitely, you probably don't want to check in at the airport after our team because there's a lot of stuff.
How did you land on these sports? I was doing a little background. I mean, you played basketball, softball, I believe, maybe in high school growing up. I mean, how did you land in cross-country skiing and biathlon and everything?
I grew up doing sports. I played softball, basketball, and kind of my, I guess, big thing that I did growing up was swimming. But I didn't really know anything about the Paralympics or adaptive sport. So I was just playing, doing those things with like my neighborhood team, swim team, or I swam in high school. And it really wasn't until I was in college that I discovered the Paralympics and realized that that was something that I was eligible for and would be able to compete in. And so at the time I thought maybe swimming would be kind of my route or my sport since that's where I had my background. And then I met someone at an adaptive swim practice. I met someone who had started a paratriathlon club. And so that was kind of my first step into para sport was through swimming, and then immediately she invited me to do all this paratriathlon stuff. So she invited me to practices, signed me up for a camp and a race, and I kind of instantly fell in love with that sport and started competing internationally in paratriathlon in 2014. And it was around that time that they were deciding the paratriathlon events that were going to be competed in 2016 in the Rio Games. And my classification, so the wheelchair women, wasn't included in that. And that's when the Paranordic team reached out to me. So they reached out and they said, "Hey, you already do it in an endurance sport. you no longer have a medal event for your sport in the summer games, why don't you come out, come to a camp and try paranordic skiing? So I started trying that, came out to a camp, and it kind of the same thing. I pretty much instantly fell in love with the sport. I think triathlon and paranordic are similar in that they both are endurance sports, but what I love about them so much is that you get to be outside. So you're competing out, you know, right now we're out in the mountains or going through the forest. Like it really is quite beautiful. And it's just a really cool way to be able to experience a new city in a new area through cross-country skiing. And so yeah, that's when they reached out to me. That was probably 2015, somewhere around there. And then yeah, I kind of did my first full season with the team in 2017, but had tried it a bit before then as well.
Love those stories about the sport finding the athlete in some of those cases. I mean, we've seen it with track stars becoming bobsledders. We've seen it with basketball and volleyball players becoming rowers because they're tall and lanky and they just so happen to be the right person at the right time saying, hey, that person might be good on a boat, you know?
Yeah, and I think you see that a lot more in parasport too. There's just so many people, one that don't even know that they can compete in the Paralympics. Hopefully awareness is a little bit higher than what it was before, so people know about it more. But you really do. You have to find those athletes and help them find the sport that they're going to be best at. And I would say paranordic is definitely a unique one. It's not a super common or popular sport in the US. So we definitely have to search out for those athletes a little bit more.
All right, so I'm guessing each Paralympic cycle has been different for you. Can you kind of run down like what was special about 2018? What was special about 2020, 2022?
Yeah, I think 2018, it was so special because that was the first one. You know, you have zero expectations on you to perform well. You really can just go and enjoy the experience of being at a games. And for me, you know, that was the biggest competition that I had been at thus far. And you go in with no pressure. And so there's a lot of freedom in that and being able to experience that. But I think it also just opened my eyes to this whole world and really kind of solidified that this was something that I wanted to keep pursuing.
South Korea is an awesome place to see the rest of the world, by the way, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, go somewhere that I never would have gone before. And I think in a lot of ways, Tokyo was the same way. You know, triathlon was a sport. Parasport that I started in first, and so having that first opportunity to be able to compete in the games for that sport was really special. And I guess it kind of felt like for 2016 I watched all of my friends and teammates that were competing in Rio, but I didn't get to be there. So to be able to experience that in 2020, that was really special. And I think we had a really tight-knit group for that team, and with the COVID restrictions, since there wasn't fans, friends, and family, we really did just kind of like s stick together as a group. And I think I have a lot of great memories from the team of athletes and staff that were there from that games. And yeah, I think Beijing was definitely probably the most unique experience of games that I've been to, just with COVID. I think COVID restrictions in China were definitely, even compared to Tokyo, way more extreme. So definitely a unique environment to be in. And again, just had a little bit more pressure on myself for those games because at this point I'd been in the sport for a lot longer and had been performing well. And so to go into a games with not just expectations for yourself, but everyone else also having expectations for you is definitely a unique experience. And I would say kind of similar, same feeling a little bit for Paris. Just going in, you know, I had won the triathlon in Tokyo, and so I had a lot of a lot of pressure on myself to perform well in Paris. And yeah, I think maybe a little bit the pressure kind of got into me of like wanting to perform really well in Paris. But I think that games was probably the most remarkable course and environment that I will ever experience. I think the French put on an amazing games, and in all of the venues in Paris were so incredible, but also had so much support from the public. Like, it just felt like everyone was really excited about those games. And I think that, for me at least, set a standard of hopefully what all of the games can be going forward in terms of number of people that are watching, and really aware and supporting Parasport, really just for the athleticism of what it is. So yeah, it does. It makes me excited to go into this winter games, and hopefully we'll have a lot of crowds there, in Italy watching all the events.
So has your mindset changed from year to year, and what's your mindset going into 2026?
Yeah, I mean, definitely my mindset has changed. I think, obviously the expectations I have for myself have changed. I think going into this games, I think that there is a group of us on our team that have been racing and competing with each other for a while now. And I think that in itself is really special because it feels like you've been kind of building towards this games together for a long time. And so I guess what I'm hoping to get out of the games is not just for myself. Like, obviously I want to do well and perform at my best, but I also want to see all my teammates do that as well. And these athletes that I've been traveling the world with for almost 8 years, yeah, it just would be like such an incredible experience to see them have their best games as well.
With all the success you've had, it's always interesting to think like, is this a gold or bust situation? Like, will you be disappointed if you don't fit? I mean, are you looking more as a personal level? Like, I'm just trying to hit this, and if I medal, that's fantastic. Or can you say, I gotta think about gold and nothing but gold?
I mean, I think at this point, I don't think I could say genuinely, like, oh, I'm just, my best is my best. Like, I am going in and wanting to medal in a lot of these races. And I think especially for biathlon, I do have expectations. I would love to win some of those races. And I think there's like a slight nuance of it, of all I can control, like I can't control how everyone else is preparing and how fit and ready they're going to be and how they perform in the races. But I can control, like, I just want to give myself the chance to win in all the races that I enter. And so I think for me, that slight mindset of just like putting yourself so you're in the race is a really important thing. And so it's not, everything's not hanging on like gold or bust. It really is just that I'm like, I am in the race, and hopefully in a race in for medals as well.
Where are your medals right now, the ones that you've won? Do you keep them on display? Are they hidden somewhere?
So my parents have one of my medals, so they have one of the medals from my first games in Korea. And then the rest of them I do just have in my room in like a bedside table.
It's not like
And
a.
I'll bring them out
There's not. Yeah.
for various events and things like that, but most of the time they kind of stay in that cabinet.
Fantastic. Well, one of the things they talked about the Team USA Media Summit, and I don't know if you've taken advantage of at all, is we heard about some of the sleep counseling, some of the mental health therapies that they're offering. I mean, have you been able to take advantage of any of that? It seems like something that the USOPC is really investing in, real understanding that sleep obviously makes people perform better. It keeps them from getting sick. I don't know if that's something you've been working on at all.
Yeah, I mean, I think sleep definitely it does. I would say it has become a shift in focus for not just athletes, but I think just the population in general. Like people are really starting to become aware of how important sleep is. And so yeah, sleep is definitely something that I track. I have an Oura ring, so I keep track of my sleep every single night. And it is something I really try to make sure that I'm getting good sleep. And the USOPC, they provide guidance for us, I think, most importantly, when we're traveling. So if we're going from Europe, or if you're going to Asia, maybe different considerations that you would have on how you might stagger your sleep on a flight so that you can better adjust to the time zone once you get there. So we've definitely been giving guidance on that when we travel. And in terms of mental health, we have a team sports psychologist that we work with for the Paranordic team. So she's at most of our races throughout the season. So you're always able to consult with her. And then also just throughout the year in general, we're able to meet with the sports psychologist kind of as frequently as we need to. And that really is so important, especially going into a major games, where there is pressure and expectations on yourself, and kind of just focusing on like what you can do and what you can control, and how to handle those pressures and things like that. So, yeah, I think that's one of the greatest resources that the USOPC provides to us, is just that access to mental health resources.
You dedicate your entire life to sports, and when things don't go your way, obviously it can create some kind of mental instability. So it's nice to have that balance. Do para athletes abide by the same drug testing rules for WADA and USADA? Are you getting people knocking at your door? Do you have to enter in your location every single day?
Yeah, so every single day you have to give an overnight location, so where you're going to be overnight, and then you also have to give a 1 hour slot throughout the day where you are guaranteeing that you will be in that location. They can test you at any time throughout the day, but in that hour you have to guarantee that you are in that spot. So yep, and they can test you wherever you are in the world. So I just had someone here last week in Canada testing me, so they came at 5:45 in the morning. And so yeah, you have to be on top of that and letting them know where you're going to be, and then also just being aware of anything that you're consuming or putting on your body that could potentially lead to a positive test result. So you really do have to be on top of what's allowed and what's not allowed in competition or out of competition, and some of them are things that you might not, or I guess the general public wouldn't think of, like certain cold medications aren't allowed, and so they're beyond just the obvious things that people would think of, there are kind of some everyday things that you're not allowed to have.
I think I read that can you scan, like, if you're getting that cold medicine at Walgreens, can you scan it and it'll tell you if there's anything that's not allowed?
Yeah, so there is a website that you can go to, and you can put in, you can either search, sometimes you can search by like the brand name of the product, or you can just search for like the active ingredients that are in that product, and then see if that is allowed. And they always have two designations of whether it's allowed in competition and out of competition, because some things are allowed in one but not the other.
Do you get back to Illinois much?
Don't go back a ton, but all of my family is still in Illinois, so I go back there over the holidays. So I'll be back for Christmas, and then usually try to get there at least a couple times a year to be able to visit family.
That's great. I tried to look you up online. You've got pretty weak Instagram game from what I can tell. Is that true? Is
Yes,
there
that is
is
very
there any
true.
social media place I should be going for more information?
No, I am not active on social media. But I always tell everyone that, probably the best way to follow me is to follow our team accounts. So US Paranordic, and so you can follow me and you can follow all my teammates.
Is there any kind of group or organization you want to highlight?
Actually a couple. So I work with the Illinois Spina Bifida Association. So we've established a sports fund with them. And so that's available for any Illinois resident with spina bifida. They're able to apply for grants in order to help with sports funding. So whether it's equipment or registration fees, if someone is playing wheelchair basketball, or if you want a personal trainer, really anything that's getting someone active, we want to try to help cover those costs. So that is a fund through the Illinois Spina Bifida Association. And then I also am a co-founder of an organization called Sisters in Sports Foundation. And this was, we started this a couple of years ago. And the idea is to help build a community of disabled women within sports. I would say, not as many women competing in para sports as there are men. And so really trying to build a community of women that support each other. And so similarly, we provide grants to athletes so they can fund their travel for sports, fund equipment for their sports. And then we also provide different educational roundtables for them. So roundtables on sports nutrition, sports psychology, just different areas so that they can level up within their sport, but also help build that community of disabled women in sports.
And that'll do it for this episode of Quest for Gold. We'll be back next week with another athlete and more updates from the Winter Games in Italy. I'm Ryan Burrow. We'll see you then.